I shall try and proceed with this tape recording. We're given a short family history of this locality. My grandmother and grandfather owned the farm, which is now owned by the state of Wisconsin Fish Hatchery and is producing fish and pine trees. My great-grandfather purchased a large tract of land surrounding the state fish hatchery. He came here from the southern part of the state, and Oshkosh, his wife, was from Oshkosh, about 105 or 6 years ago. He had 3 sons, and he'd bought enough land right surrounding Wild Rose for the 3 boys to have each a farm. My mother was born, as I say, on the land adjacent to the state fish hatchery. My father was born in the town of Springwater, and his father died when he was a very small child. He owned the land which his father purchased from the government, and the 40 which our house stands on at this time in the town of Rose, the land contract was signed by James Buchanan, president preceding President Lincoln. 2 years ago, Mrs. Davis and I were honored as a century farmer in Wisconsin. There's one farm which got this honor before us, which is the Henry Smith Farm, now operated by J. Smith. Coverage of our family history, and you see that we've lived in this locality a long while. My wife was raised about a half mile from our present home, so I didn't go very far to get a wife. She was of a Welsh descent, and her grandfather was a great leader of singing in this locality. So from this point, we'll go on to the custom and the practices of the Welsh people in this locality. They all felt that they were gifted with the virtue of singing. And when this country was very wild and scattering, they entertained themselves very much with sacred singing and also other songs. They had singing schools. It was a practice to hold singing schools either in country schools or churches. The first Welsh to settle in this locality were of a different denomination. There was the Baptist, the Congregational, and the Calvinistic Methodists, which afterwards joined the Presbyterian churches. They had these singing schools, and anybody that was gifted with the talent of conducting a singing school would organize one in a country school or in a church, and he'd give as much as 10 or 12 lessons once a week during the winter time, and charge a sum of probably about 50 cents for the term, which they enjoyed, and it spread out not only with the Welsh, but many of the other nationalities, which consisted of Norwegians, English, and other nationalities, used to attend these singing schools. Later on, as they had more country schools in the community, they used to practice very much the art and the virtue of spelling. And they'd contest every different local schools to meet, and they'd have a spelling match. Most of these projects was carried on in the winter time when there was a slack time of work.
Mr. Davies, how were the spelling matches conducted?
Well, the spelling matches were conducted. The schoolmaster generally was the leader. And they choose sides, or one school would enter a challenge to the other. They stood up in long rows, one each side of the schoolhouse, or wherever they would be gathered, and the words was passed on. When one missed a word, well, his competitor would try it. If he was lucky in spelling it, well, that side gained one, and the other side lost one. And that was the procedure until the last two or three stood up. And of course, those that was able to stand and spell to the last was classed as the champions of that spelling match that night. In the singing schools, there were local fellows that was singing masters to quite an extent. My wife's uncle, or my wife's grandfather, John D. Jones, was the first one to conduct him. Later on, there was a fellow by the name of Lowe. I think it was Richard Lowe, his name was. And he made it quite a practice of preparing a bunch to sing in the summertime at the 4th of July celebrations. They used to be invited to some quite large distance at that time, as much as 10 or 15 miles away from this locality to sing at 4th of July celebrations. Then there was others that kind of enjoyed this little small income that they get by conducting singing school during the wintertime. And there was my wife's uncle, William X. Evans, and there was a fellow by the name of Owens, W.T. Owens, that conducted them in several different places. It was a source of getting together, learning something that was worthwhile, and also helping their several churches by giving them better singing.
What other things did your parents and you do for entertainment? There were no movies or commercial entertainment. It was all centered in the family, didn't it?
It was centered in the family, and it was a very common thing to have family gatherings, both relatives and community family gatherings. And they always carried these gatherings, if they were in a public way, such as the 4th of July, Christmas, and so on, in a competitive way. And although their rewards were small, but quite often they got some kind of a gift if they were victorious, either in spelling, singing, or composing poetry, which was a fad amongst them quite a bit, a composing poetry. And it was a drawing card, of course, at them days. They didn't have any movies, didn't have any cars, traveled by foot mostly because they used their oxen as beast of burden and they couldn't travel very far with the oxen anyway.
Mr. Davis, you mentioned other groups than the Welsh in Washera County. How did the Welsh get along with these other groups?
Well, it seems as though they must have got along very well, because today they're very much intermarried amongst each other, got along very well. Of course, there was this national prejudice to a certain extent. They all thought that they did the things right and they did them best. In general, I say that the Welsh people catered pretty much to the Christian life in organizing churches and so on, and also the Sabbath rulings and so on, while the other denominations were more lenient in keeping the Sabbath. I sometimes feel today that maybe the Welsh was right to a certain extent, because the Sabbath is kept in a very different way today than it was 100 years ago. But the forefathers, both of all nationalities, Welsh, Norwegians, and English, that settled in this community, were a hard-working people. They were poor, and they co-worked together, built this community up. It's poor soil in general all over the town of Rose and the spring water. But they made a living, raised large families, and I feel that they've been a great asset as a unity of different nationalities to promote the general welfare of this community. And now, in closing, I wish to, on behalf of the farmers of a community around Wild Rose, I wish to congratulate the people of Wild Rose very much in their achievement this last few months of promoting the wonderful cleanup of the village and winning the great prizes in which they have, which I feel is also a glory and a betterment both financially and as unity with the people of Wild Rose for the farmers in general around here. Further, I guess that I'll have to quit thanking you all for listening for this short tape. But in order to promote the general welfare of this community, let us all walk in the light that we may have fellowship one with another.
Mr. Henry Jeffers. Mr. Henry Jeffers is 83 years old, a resident of Wild Rose. Since he was 8 years old, he has gone to the county fair every year, missing only 1 year during that time. Mr. Jeffers, county fairs nowadays are kind of different than those when you were a boy, aren't they?
Yeah. Is it all right to talk? There's an awful difference. I've been to the Waltoma Fair when they'd have it later in September, when sometimes we'd freeze out and sometimes we'd get rained out. And it's so much difference today than it was them days.
What is different about the entertainment at the fair nowadays?
Well, those days they had different horse races and everything, but today they don't have no harness races or anything like that to the county fair. It's just two running horses and so on. And then they judge the stock so much different nowadays than they used to.
How did they judge the stock in those days?
Well, they used to take them from the barn across the track and have a place there where they'd set different classes of horses or anything like that. Like they'd have, say, 3-year-olds or something like that, or 4-year-olds, whatever to be, different classes, and they'd judge them.
What do you think is the most interesting thing you've ever seen in all the county fairs you've been to?
Well, for me, the horse racing is the most interesting to me.
Does one particular race stand out in your mind?
Oh yes, the farmers used to have race horses here those days. The fellow by the name of Tommy Davis used to have one, and the fellow by the name of George Lowe, he had a race horse. And there used to be another one there. I don't just remember that one. But anyway, there used to be 3 of them from Wild Rose here to go to the county fair every year. And then there used to be one come from Wapaki, Cartwright, his name was. He used to come down here with a horse. And then the farmers used to put in a farm horse, you know, the running race, something like that. I don't just remember who all, there was different ones, whoever wanted to put a horse in, enter a horse for a horse race, but they went in.
How much were the purses?
Oh, I don't know, there wasn't very much. I don't remember what the purses was.
I see.
But they wasn't very much.
Mr. Jeffers, tell us a little bit about your family and your life here in the community, the people you remember and things you did.
The biggest share of the people, they're dead and gone. The older people, the biggest share of them are dead and gone. But I was born here on 22 between here and Waltoma on a farm, and then we also used to, my father owned the 40 acres here where the box factory is up here now. And then later on he traded this 40 acres for 120 acres of land west of town here with a lady named Lib Jeffers. And then we lived there for quite a good many years, and of course times was pretty hard, and and they, well, it went on the mortgage. And then later on we moved to down here by Silver Lake and lived there. I was the home for 9 years, and then I got married and settled on the farm here west of town that was known as Wendell Woodard's farm at that time. And I worked there about 1 year, and then I moved down here. His brother again had a farm right here by the depot, and I worked that farm for 1 year for him, and then they surveyed through for the railroad, and then a fellow later on bought it by the name of T.S. Roberts. He bought it, and then I worked it 5 years for him, and then from there I moved here in town, and I've been here ever since. Lived here, but I've worked at different things. I used to team it, and then work in the meat market and so on. I used to cut ice for a merchant. His name is Charlie Smart. He used to live here in town. Way back years ago, he gave me a cent of cake, cut it 18 inches square, and I had all I had was one of these common wood saws, crosscut saws we used to call them. Stand there, humped over like that, and sawing all day, and I made a dollar a day. That's the first dollar that I ever made in my life, and I made a dollar a day. But when I used to work out just a kid, I got 35 cents a day, 10 hours a day too. And so on, I used to team it. I moved people, you know, from here to different towns, Plainfield or Almond. The last trip I ever made with horses was down to Oshkosh. I moved a fellow down there. Took me 3 days to make the trip with the horses.
You spent a good many of your years of your life on the farm. Would you care to comment about some of the interesting occurrences on the farm, or the interesting differences in farming then than now?
Oh yes, well when I first, I worked with my father, but he told me 1 year that if I'd stayed at home, then I could have a piece of land to break up and have what I could get off from it. And so I broke the land up and put it into potatoes. And I got, I don't remember how many bushel I got, quite a few bushel potatoes. And I sold some of them for 22 cents a bushel right in the field. And then I dug a cellar up in the hills, in the sand hills, and I put 100 bushel of potatoes in there, and I kept them till towards spring. And I got married that winter in January. And then I got married, and I took this Wendell Woodard's farm, and I hauled potatoes to Plainfield, put them up and hauled them for 5 cents a bushel to Plainfield. I hauled 1,200 bushel of potatoes for him. Well, the market went up long in February, I think it was, to 55 cents. And so I thought, well, a good time for me to sell my potatoes now. So I went down, my brother helped me put the potatoes up, and then I went to Plainfield the next day with them, and I got 55 cents. And then that afternoon, that noon, the train come in from the south, and they put the mail in, and they dropped the price down to 45 cents. And then this Woodard, he says, well, he says, I won't sell them for that. He says, you put mine in now and store them. So he did. Well, he kept them till way long in the spring, and he had to sell them for 20 cents a bushel. But I tell you, them days, it was a lot of money for me, for about $54 or something I got for the potatoes. And I was just started in. When I got married, I had one horse, and 100 bushel potatoes, that's all I had. And when I got married, I tell them that I was so hard up that I had to pay the preacher. I had to make it two payments for the pay. And that's so, too. Yeah, that's true.
You really paid the preacher in two different payments?
Yeah, I had to. That's the only way I couldn't get the... Well, there was not much to be done. I was just thinking of hauling potatoes for 5 cents a bushel, about 12, 13 miles. And I hauled 52 or 55 bushel potatoes. I'd carry them 32 bags of potatoes, and they weigh around 100 to 120 pounds, depend on how you fill them, and go up 9 steps, shoulder them all alone, and came upstairs. So that really worked. Well, if the sleighing was good and the weather was right, well, I'd go, say, today, and then I'd come home, put up my load, and go the next day, and the next day, so on, like 3 days. So there'd be 90-some bags of potatoes to handle. Well, you had to handle them twice. You see, I hold them, handle them, carry them up, load them, and then I unload again. So that's kind of the way I got started. I started at the bottom of the ladder, all right.
Do you remember when the railroad came to Wild Rose?
1901.
I see.
Yeah.
What difference did it make in the town, having the railroad come?
Oh, well, it started to build up then. Yeah, it started to build up. All them buildings, big buildings on there on Main Street, they built them up after it. But the first store C.A. Smart used to have, the way down on the corner, well, that's built, started that before I was born. I know my folks used to go from about 2 miles west of town here and go down, generally they'd done their shopping on Saturday night, you know, and go down there and do their shopping. And they had the hitching posts, all the horses, you know, them days, all board sidewalk all along there on Main Street. Yeah.
And you say that most of the stores on Main Street were built after the railroad came.
Oh, yes. Yeah, most of them.
Did it make any difference in where people sent their goods to market, where farmers marketed their goods, having the railroad in town?
Well, at that time, now, for stock, we always had to, we did, and I don't know what we always had or not, but you hauled it to Walpacket, and I went from Silver Lake down here with a load of hogs one time, clear to Princeton. It's a big day's drive, and I think we got $2.25 a hundred live weight for the hogs.
Uh-huh.
And well, then I walked from Silver Lake clean into Walpacket two different times and drove stock. First time was cattle, and then the next time was I drove from Dave Bowen's farm east of here, and Billy Gardner's name was, we drove sheep up to Walpacket. But then later on, after we got more acquainted, we went to haul our potatoes to Plainfield, it's much nearer, but we always wanted to go to Walpacket, for there's so much more going on there. But we get up at, you know, say, probably 2 o'clock in the morning to feed the horses and get around, and go to Walpacket and get back about 9 o'clock at night and get 10 cents a bushel for potatoes. And then the fellow by the name of Prothop, we call him Chick, but his name is Lewis Prothop. They lived over here on the Saxville Road, and he come over there and to our place, and then we walked clear down to Blow Mount Morris to a Christmas tree and back home again. The snow was quite deep on the road, was plowed out, but not like nowadays. They put a plow on the side of the sleigh, you know, and plow the road out, and that's all the road there was. And we'd go down there, they had the Christmas tree, you know, and then the Norwegians, they all passed the apples around, you know. Well, they'd be over on this side passing them over, and we'd get an apple, and then maybe we'd move over on the other side, and they'd come around, and we'd get another. We'd come home with our pockets full of apples. Yeah, but, and then I walked from different times, they'd go over on the, we lived by the lake, and then we'd go cross over to the Saxville Road and walk through the Saxville to some doings or other, and then back home again. Well, there's nothing to walk them days. Yeah. But I was going to say, you know, now, same as when I was born here on 22, that's where I was born. Then my father owned this 40 where the box factory is there. And I can remember, I wasn't very big. I couldn't have been more than, 4 or 5 years old. It come from an awful storm, a cyclone. And it went right through It didn't do no damage there, but it struck way over here by Crystal Lake and done quite a lot of damage there. I guess it blowed John Humphrey's barn. I believe it blowed that away. But I also remember that, for the sky was just blue all over, dark and blue, and the light, oh, it's just terrible everywhere. The light was going. Yeah. I don't think, I know my brother and we run down the cows running in the road then. We run down the road and got the cows and got them by the tails and run them home. Oh yeah, there's an awful lot of change and everything. Fairs, they, in them days too, the fairs, they had more farm grown stuff, you know, say potatoes and corn and everything like that, but now they have them so early that they ain't much of that stuff that gets ripe to take into the fairs. Grain and all that.
Did they have a midway with all the games of chance?
Oh, yes, yes.
What were some of the games that they had along the midway then?
Oh, they had a little of everything. Cane racks and everything like that. But they didn't have none of these Ferris wheels and all that in them days. No, it was more of this other stuff. Well, they used to do some gambling, not very much, though. They did have Ferris wheels, you know, or I don't know what they call a wheel, you spin it, you know, and then wherever it stopped, whatever is there where you won, numbers. Yeah. Yeah, I was there one time and I got hurt terrible bad there. They had it where they had the cane rack, you know, it's boards on the side to keep the people back. And I sit down on the edge of it and I just put my leg back, just put it back a little bit, you know, and then another fellow come along, and he sat down and went down and cut my leg all clear down, just shaved it right down. Well, my cousin happened to be there, and I told him about it, and so we just went off to one side, and I tied the hangers around it, and that was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we lived down by the Silver Lake then, and I told my folks about it, and then the next day he took me up, Father did up here to the doctor. Well, the doctor had just came in here then and sewed my leg up. Well, you know, I didn't take no anesthetic or none. I just rammed the needle in and drawed it together, sewed it up. I don't think I could take it then, but them days I could take anything. It got hurt terribly.
What sort of games did young people play, or what did they do for young people do for entertainment when you were a boy?
Mostly ball games. Of course, they just didn't have regular no team or anything like that. Just pick up whoever they could. You know? That's about the only thing there was them days. And they pitch horseshoes or something like that. Of course, we never got out so very much for. Well, there wasn't much of anything to go to anyway. But my folks never allowed us to go out much until we got bigger. And then let's go out to maybe till 12 o'clock, and that'd be the latest. I never was out all night long. The folks wouldn't allow it.
Did you have your own horse when you were, say, in your teens?
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had one horse. Oh, I commenced to go run around with the girls. I had a pony and a two-wheel cart. And I know I went to a celebration over here to Mount Morris, and I took a neighbor's daughter. I took her to the fair and only had 50 cents. And I tell them today you couldn't get out of the dooryard with a girl if you didn't have more than 50 cents.
Mr. Jeffers, what do you remember as the main buildings in town when you were the first ones you remember?
Well, that's the C.A. Smart Store. And And then there was another barn building right across the road, vacant now, that used to be the first post office, as I can remember, and a fellow by the name of John Rice run it at that time. And then you take it up there where they have them seats. Maybe you've noticed them seats on that side of the street where they have the outdoor shows they had last night. Well, there used to be a store in there. Well, my uncle, John Bailey, his name was, he run a post office there, lived there at one time. And then Bill Humphrey used to have a post office in there. But I think they've got all of that.
There was a blacksmith shop in town, you say?
Oh, yes, yeah. Probably by the name of Fisher used to run a blacksmith shop. Of course, it changed hands. There's different ones that had run it, but he was the main one that I remember the first.
Do you remember who else ran the blacksmith shop?
Oh, yeah, it was a fellow by the name of Louis Ryerson, there's a fellow by the name of Evan Harris Owens, and then later on, I think the last one I remember is Joe Lane, who ran a blacksmith shop there.
When did the blacksmith shop close, do you remember?
No, I don't. Well, it's quite a good many years ago. No, I don't remember just when that closed.
Was there ever a harness maker in town?
Yes. There used to be a harness maker here by the name of, he run a harness shop right there where the second-hand store is right side of the post office there. Kepler. Well, before him is, what in the world? Glover, run a high shop. He's the first one I ever remember. Well, then a building just back there, there used to be a fellow by the name of Lusher Stewart. He run a shoe shop there back, well, that's a good many years ago. That building stands there yet today. And we used to take our shoes in there and get them tapped, but still using steel nails like they do now. They had wooden pegs. But that building stands right there yet today. Well, both of them does.
Were there other businesses that used to be in Wild Rose that have disappeared and there's no business like that in Wild Rose now?
Well, let's see. No, I don't know. I don't remember any, and that's closed out entirely, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know if I can think of it. There's some of the buildings been replaced, the hardware there. That building has been replaced. There used to be a house, hardware started there, and then they sold it, my cousin bought it, and they moved it over on the back street and made it into a house. And then they built this new hardware store there. Of course, there's been lots of changes now where Herman Hansen lives there, just across the street from the post office. Like, there used to be a fellow by the name of Fisher. He used to live there, and then later on, Joe Lane lived there, and then there used to be a doctor by the name of Dr. Abbott. He had his office up overhead of the the house there, and I used to go to school and stay there with him and took care of the horses, Doc Abbott. And then and I'd go after school down there and carry wood up to his office for him. Drove teams, say, Saturdays or Sundays like that, took care of the horses, and then sometimes I'd drive the team for him. But I wasn't very big at that time either.
Did you have any interesting adventures while you were driving horses for the doctor?
No.
Did you ever have to help him in any way other than just driving for him? Or?
No, no. No, I never have anything on just take care of the horses and drive. But outside that, that's all I have done for the doctor. Well, they generally have someone set up all night with them, you know. I've set up quite a number about it, and they used to be a family, but they live way down, but a creek away from the main road in an old log house. They raised a big family, and well, when she passed away, the fellow that was undertaker here is just, well, I don't know how to say, he was a kind of blacksmith, and he made coffins and one thing like that, and I happened to be up there when she passed away, and I helped him put her in her coffin box. Oh, isn't my granddad, he is the burying ground out here. He gave the land for the burying ground, and he made the first rough box that ever went into that burying ground. I dug a good many graves up there too, and also on this other one there. That was a good many years ago. Yeah, time they had they call it the bank robbers here. Why, it wasn't the bank robbery, it was the post office they robbed. Well, I was living right on this farm up here then, and my cousin and another fellow was digging potatoes for me, and I was just going out the field with a load of potato boxes, and the fellow was carrying me. They come on and said, I had a jacket on where it was burnt full of little holes where the sparks from the steam engine had burnt it. And he said, were you in that bank robbing last night? And I said, I don't know, I hadn't heard anything about it. But he says, they robbed the post office last night. And when I'm telling about it, I got in the field, I said, well, I bet they can get them fellows. They ain't got any more start than that. And my cousin said, oh, I don't know. He said, they get away in other places. Well, I said, I bet they'll get them. And they did get them, too. Of course, they killed one right out. And the other, a couple of them that peppered them, was fine shot. But in there, they got the hell for them. Well, I happened to be downtown that night, and I seen when they come in. Well, it looked like a bunch of Indians coming in, you know, that had the handkerchiefs tied around their neck, guns, and some of them was running along, and they had the horses, no cars in. And I remember they fetched in this, they called him Patsy. They had him in one place, and then this Rambler, he's the head leader of the claim, and the fellow here in town, he scalped it, he shot it, right here, just scalped him. And then when the detective got here, it says they had him in another building. And it says, you want to keep your eye on that fella. I said, quick, you take your eye on, he'll be gone. And the other two fellas, they fetched in, they had one of these cannabis, these top buggies, you know, posts, and you've probably seen them. And they had them with the halters, tied around the post with the halters around their necks. They fetched them in, they had two of them on that side, and the other one was over where the tavern is now, and then there's another building there where they had, it was burnt down, where they had this Patsy laying on the floor. Everybody was got their chores done before dark then, they're scared to death. I was living right here on the farm then. Be something like that I could think of later on, but I don't know if there's anything that would be interesting to anybody. Yeah. I know they're asking Mrs. Pierce the question, how they done for meat in the wintertime, potatoes. Well, all they've done is dig the potatoes and put them in the cellar and probably kill a hog or two and salt it down for salt pork. It had to be the only thing they had them days. In the woods, they used to do a lot of butchering beeves, you know. They'd butcher a number of head of, you know, and same as today, and then tomorrow morning, where they'd load it into the sleigh and haul it to Plainfield, and of course it'd ship north to the lumber woods.
Did farmers around here do a great deal of butchering for the lumber camps?
Well, them days, yeah. Yeah, I know this Mrs. Pierce's mother, they used to butcher, six or seven men butcher all day, you know. But them days they didn't butcher as fast as they do today. I went with Frank Addo up here after 11 o'clock, and of course, it was night when it got on. I mean, we butchered six, just two of us. Yeah. Well, I tell them they'd be surprised if I'd take them around the country and I used to butcher, be in the butcher shop, and I used to buy stock and butcher, and I said, I'll take you around the country, I'll bet you. I said, you look where the barn doors is, and you look up to the rafters, I said, you see a couple of wires in the rafters about that far apart. I said, you'll know I've been there.
Why is that?
Well, to hang the beef up. You know, I'd have two tackle blocks, and I'll hook in each one, you know, pull the beef up, hang it up. Seems the fairs, it's nothing like they used to be. It's more 4-H stuff nowadays. And when I was a kid, it was all, you know, everybody, farmers from anywhere, it was all around.